Well, we've already seen the kind of meticulous process that's involved in sorting out the archaeology and the measurements and the dimensions and where things were. You heard a very wonderful point of view in the last lecture. Now be prepared for a shock, a surprise, a contradiction, two Jews, three opinions. We get a wonderfully helpful, enlightened, thoroughly researched point of view which will not agree with the one that you just heard previously. But which can be defended on very solid grounds. And so you're going to have a great time. This is not the last of the wonderful points of view you'll hear this week. Tuvius Agave is a wonderful dear friend. We've written, talked back and forth, and spent many hours together. He's an architect. He lives down in Philistia. That's the Los Angeles, the Tel Aviv area of Jerusalem. It's doesn't quite have the holiness of Jerusalem, but they're gaining it down there very quickly by bringing it down the mountain. Anyway, Tuvia has some wonderful slides and also has made available an outstanding videotape. I saw the pilot of it a year ago. It's really outstanding. You'll want to take one home for your friends, and we have some copies available. Tuvia Sagiv.
I have to hold it. I'm very happy to be here and see you all in Israel, in Jerusalem, nearby the Holy Temple. I made the work, a research about the Jewish temple more than 5 years, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to show some of my results. What you see here is the area which is called the Temple Mount. I prefer to call it the Harem al-Sawif, the Arabic name, or let us call it Moriah Court, because we don't know exactly where is the Temple Mount. I'm sure that all of you have a lot of knowledge about Jerusalem and about the Holy Temple, and don't throw away what you know. It's very important. But let us look at it like a puzzle, and let us break all the knowledge you have and create together a new puzzle, another point of view to understand the area. And you will see that I'm using the same elements Dan Bat has spoken now before, and everything you know. I have nothing special new, but another point of view. And everything looks in another way. Let us begin. This is the picture of the area. I will try so it will be easy for us. The north will be on the left of our side. Here you see the area itself. Here is the north. Here is the east, south, and west. This is the Wailing Wall. And in this area is the Jewish Quarter. You came from here, mostly. Here you have a picture of the area. And you can see the main buildings in the area. Here is the Dome of the Rock. Here is the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Here is the Wailing Wall. And here is the Golden Gate. You see? So this is the main important thing here. There are some gates in the area. Here is the double and the triple gates. Here is the Barclay Gate. Here is the Robinson Arch. And inside we have the Warren Gate and Wilson Arch. You can see them here. The Wailing Wall, Wilson and Warren Arch, double and triple gate, and the Golden Gate here. This is the archaeological evidence. Now we can see what's written. Here you have a model of the area, how it's described in our sources. And as you know, the sources we are talking about are the books of Josephus Flavius and the Mishnah. It's the Jewish sources who describes exactly what happens and how it looks. The main element here is the Temple Mount itself, the women court, the priest court, the temple itself, the altar here, and here the Holy of the Holy, in which only once a year the high priest get in. in order to understand and make things clear, everything. Now you have a computer model of the area, and again you can see the entrance, the women court, the priest court, the temple itself, and is the entrance to the Holy of the Holy. According to, you know, there are a lot of ideas where was exactly the Holy of the Holy. And here you have the model in Holy Land Hotel. You can see the temple, the entrance, and inside the Holy of the Holy. You know, there are a lot of problems exactly where is the Holy of the Holy. Some say it was in the north, you know, Professor Kaufman theory. Some say that the Holy of the Holy is the rock of the dome. And some say that the rock is the place of the altar. In our discussion, I prefer to talk according to the theory that says, Dunbar theory, that says that the Dome of the Rock is the place, the Holy of the Holy. Because the question I have is for all the theories, all other theories, but I prefer to talk about this. It's very clear and very simple. As an architect, I try to understand the area not in two-dimensional system, but in a three-dimensional system. And this is the difference, and you will see what happens in the moment we look at it in another point of view. Most of the archaeologists, scientists, they have taken the facts, the place itself, how it looks. They take the literature sources, put them on together, one another, and try to say, all right, the area itself is bigger than what's written in the sources, so let us try and find where is the place of the Temple Mount. Maybe it's in the south, maybe in the center, maybe in the north. And I try to understand the area in a three-dimensional fact, three-dimensional point of view, and the point is to understand and to see and find in the sources evidence about point of view, topography, supplying of water, everything which can give us a lot of information about the temple, and from this trying to find where is the temple. And let us see what will happen. The first thing which is very astonishing is the fact that the area itself, which we see now, you see, this is the archaeologic evidence. This is the court nowadays, the Moriah court, which I call. Here you see the dimension of the area of the Temple Mount according to the Mishnah. And here you see the dimension of the area according to Josephus Flavius. As you heard from Dan Baat, the answer of the question, how comes that this is larger and bigger than what's mentioned in the sources, is that what's written in the Mishnah is the holy place, the holy court. And Herod enlarged the area. But if you go back to Josephus Flavius, when he described the Temple Mount of Herod, he is talking about something which is even smaller what's written in the Mishnah. It's talking about stadia by stadia, which means 2 meters by 2 meters. 300 feet by 300 feet. No, excuse me. 600 feet by 600 feet. That's all. And what we have here is about 500 meters, which is 1,500 feet. It doesn't fit at all. And this is not a holy place. He's talking about Herod Temple. And he says more than that, that here was the great basilica. It was one stadia, which is about 200 meters. And now the area itself here is about 300 meters. It doesn't work. It doesn't fit. So it's not enough to say that according to the Mishnah, it's something holy that Herod enlarged the area. The fact is, describing the Temple Mount, according to Josephus Flavius, the dimension of the Temple Mount in the time of Herod was only 200 by 200 meters. And the shape of the area is different from what we see nowadays. The area today is rectangular, trapezoid rectangular. According to the sources, both of them, it was a square. So what's going on? One question. One of the main entrances to the Temple Mount, Mount Sihu on the left, was from the double and the triple gate, which are called the Hulda Gate. Here you see in the left, and here I made a section. And you, here is the entrance, you enter in, entrance to the Temple Mount, and here is the level of the Holy of the Holy. Here. Yes, you see? According to the sources, according to the Mishnah and according to the Sefer Flavius, the difference of height between the Hulda Gate and the Holy of the Holy was about 10 meters. Now when you're coming to the area and you measure the difference of height between the Hulda Gate nowadays and the Dome of the Rock, or even if you go to, according to Professor Kaufman's theory, the difference of height is 20 meters. Where are the 10 meters? In the sources, nothing is mentioned about such a height. So the scholars came to the conclusion there was a tunnel here. And indeed, in fact, there is a tunnel in the area, underground the El-Aqsa Mosque. But this tunnel is from a later time. And the scholars even tried to make an illustration how it looked in the past. But there is no such evidence. Nowhere it's written there is such a tunnel. According to Josephus Flavius, from outside the city, you enter directly to the Temple Mount. There was no tunnel in the description, in the literature sources we have. But if we say that indeed this is the level of the Temple Mount, this is the entrance. This is the entrance to the Temple Mount. It means that we have to go 10 meters at all and find the level of the Holy of the Holy. So we have to lower the level of the temple. If this is indeed the entrance, and we have to go only 10 meters, and you can tell me, all right, 10 meters, 5 meters, don't be so... You know, we have a lot of mountain hills in Jerusalem, so 10 meters is no problem. But you see that in the sources, they are arguing about every step. If somebody is not sure, we say, no, you are not right. There was only 20 steps, only 2 steps. So it was very important for them to direct and say how many steps there were there. And there is a correlation between Josephus Flavius about the difference of height and what's written in the Mishnah. Both of them, we calculate, you have 10 meters, that's all. So what's going on? Another question. Here is the area, as you see. And this is the area, as you have heard from Dan Bahat, of the Antonia Fortress. Look at the left. Here, there is a school, it's called El Omaria. And according to most of the scholars, this is the place of the Antonia. All right, I have no objection. It looks very nice. Very nice, all right. I made a section. And I go back to what Josephus Flavius is describing about the Antonia Fortress. As you heard, the Antonia Fortress was built by Herod, enlarging a fortress which was built by the had been built by the Hashmonaim before. Josephus Flavius didn't describe anything about the dimension of the area. In order to be the same, let us. Now you can see it. You see, this is in the left, and now you have it here in the left. So it will be in the same direction. Here is the north. Here is the temple. There is no evidence about the dimensions of the fortress, but Josephus Flavius is talking about the height. And he said that the dome, that the Antonia fortress was on a rock, which was about 25 meters, 75 feet. In this area, there is no such a rock. There is nothing which is about 75 feet. So where is the rock on which the Antonia stood? You see, the moment you look at it in a three-dimensional way, we have some problems. It doesn't work. Where is this rock? Indeed, there is here a rock, but it's only 5 meters high. Nowadays, there is no problem to destroy a mountain. But in those days, till the last century, it was very difficult to change a location of a mountain, of a rock. And if there was something like this, and we will hear about it later, somebody has to write about it. And we have nothing about somebody who destroyed the Antonia rock. So where is the rock on which the Antonia stood? Let us say another thing. If indeed the area nowadays, which is lower, is the place of the Antonia, we have to go down 25 meters in order to find the Temple Mount. So in other case, we have another evidence that we have to lower the level of the temple. Here I want to show you also a model from the computer which shows the temple, the court, the Temple Mount, and the Antonia fortress. It's not a model, it's only by the computer. It has been done by the computer. Now I would like to tell you about the famous ditch, the moat, Dunbar has spoken about, which has a lot of connection to Kaufman's theory. Here you see the dome of the rock, or the rock on which the dome of the rock stands. Here is the Antonia, according to the archaeologist. And in between these two elements, there is a moat, a ditch, discovered by Charles Warren. And the question is, how comes that there is a ditch in the area itself? Because according to the description of Josephus Flavius, from Antonia, you enter directly inside the Temple Mount. There is a description of a ditch in Josephus Flavius. But he said that the ditch was in the north of the Antonia. So let us say, if this is the ditch that Josephus Flavius is talking about, the Antonia should be in the south. It doesn't work. And the main question to Professor Kaufman, if you say that the temple was here, it means that the temple was on the ditch. It doesn't make sense. Now I want to tell you a story which sounds like an article in a yellow page, a yellow newspaper, I call it. It's a story about Agrippa II. Agrippa II was the grandson of Herod the Great, and he was educated in Rome, and he came to Jerusalem and lived in the area here nearby, you see here, in the Hashmonaim Palace, which was in the area of the nowadays Jewish quarter. From there, he made him in a very nice apartment, and he looked inside the priest's court and looked how the Jews sacrificed, how the priests sacrificed the animals. The Jews were very angry about it. They didn't like it, and therefore they built here a wall, you see here, to avoid the view from Agrippa's inside the court. The Romans, who patrolled the area here all around, you see, were very angry because of this wall they couldn't see what happened inside. And they were all the time afraid of revolution. because this is the main point from which all the revolution came out. So they asked the Jews to destroy this wall. The Jews didn't agree, and they sent some of the most important people, a delegation, to Nero the king, to Rome, and persuade him to leave the wall as it is. You know, it sounds like a newspaper nowadays, because a petition in the Double Gate in Hebron is an international evidence, an international accident. And the same thing happened here, that a simple wall here caused that people will go to Neon and ask him to avoid or destroy this wall. But the fact, and it was some years before, it was in the time of Josephus Flavius. It sounds true. The people know about this evidence. It was some years before the temple was destroyed. Very nice, a story. I try to see and understand how comes. What did Agrippa see? And I made a section saying, all right, from here, somewhere inside, Agrippa could see what happens in this court. Because to see what happens in the altar is impossible, because the temple, which was very high, avoid any view. The only way to see something is here inside between these two walls, the wall of the temple and the wall of the court. So inside he looked, and here indeed there was a place in which the animals were sacrificed. So I made a section, and the surprise is, look, we have a lot of look, here's the altar area, here's the temple, here's the wall of the court, and here's the Wilson Arch, here's the Jewish quarter nowadays. In this place was the palace of the Hashmonaim, and from here somewhere Agrippa look inside. But my dear friends, in order to see something from here, you have to build you a building which is about 50 to 70 meters, which is about 200 feet. There is no such a building in Jerusalem even nowadays. So how comes that Agrippa could see anything inside the area? I checked it also in by the computer, and it's the same. You see, here is the temple, here is the court, here is the area from which you can see something, but there is no way to see anything. You don't need any additional wall in order to avoid a view. There is no view. The only way, I have done the same thing. Here you can see the temple. This is from the Holiday Hotel model. You can see here the temple, here is the wall of the court, and here you see the tables on which the animals were sacrificed. But in order to see this, you must be about 50 to 70 meters high. There was no way in those days to see what happened inside. The only way is to lower the temple. Now, we have a feeling all the time we have to lower the temple, but how much? And what will be the real level? In order to understand this, let us talk about the water supply system to Jerusalem. You know, one of the main problems of Jerusalem was water supply, and the Jews made a wonderful engineering system of supplying water to Jerusalem. So long. It begins in the area of Hebron and the area of Bethlehem. You have seen the Solomon pools, and from there, with an aqueduct, the water goes through about a line of 30 kilometers and brought water to Jerusalem, using the fact that Bethlehem and Hebron are higher than Jerusalem. And the water came to Jerusalem, and from Jerusalem to the temple. As we know, you can see even some section of the tunnel of the aqueduct. You know, the aqueduct was used even nowadays, still the last century. It was used by the Arabs. Here you see the tunnel of the water. And here you can see the line which the Arabs made here. Till the beginning of the century, the last century, it was used by and gave water to Jerusalem. According to the sources, there were two elements in the temple in which they had used the water from the aqueduct. One was the high priest bath, ritual bath. Once in a year, you know, the high priest came inside the Holy of the Holy and he had to wash himself. And this area, which was a bath above the water gate, here came the water and the high priest entered, washed himself and go prepared himself to enter to the Holy of the Holy. Another purpose, which is mentioned in our sources, that the use of the aqueduct was to wash the priest court. You know, here was the altar, a lot of blood was in the court, and in order to wash it, they used the aqueduct. Now, if we put the temple on the Dome of the Rock, or according to Professor Kaufman in the north area, and on the other hand, we have exactly the height of the aqueduct nowadays, we can see there is no way to bring the water to the high priest, and there is no way to bring the water to the priest's court. So how can they use the aqueduct water to wash the court? How could they use the water for the high priest? And it was very important, and in, you know, in those days there were no machine, all the system was by gravitation. So how come? The only way is, look with me together, is just to lower the level of the temple. And more than that, by using the water aqueduct, we can assume exactly the level of the Temple Mount. Now, the question is, where to put the temple? We came to the conclusion that we have to lower the temple. This area is rocky. It is the rock of the Dome of the Rock. So there is no way to lower the temple here. In the north, we can see the rocks. So there is no way to lower it. Maybe the conclusion is that the temple is not here at all. Maybe it's in here, in Hilton. Maybe it's in Tel Aviv. I don't know. But it doesn't work. But the only way I can think to put the temple is in the south. Again, I don't know if it's there. But the conclusion is that it should be in a lower place. And the only place I can put it is here, in between the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. You see? And let us see what will happen if we will arrange everything like this. You see the temple, here you see all around the dashed lines is the area as it is nowadays. What you see here in the left. And in between, I put 500 by 500 the element of the temple. And I know that the ditch was in the north of the Antonia. So what comes out, that the rock in the Dome of the Rock is the Antonia. You see what happened? We put the temple in the south, and the dome and the rock of the Dome of the Rock is the Antonia. And north of it is the ditch. So it's exactly what is described by the Josephus Flavius. And in the moment, we lower the plate of the temple. We enter from the Hulda gate directly to the Temple Mount without using any tunnel. This is solved again. And here is the place of the Antonia, the Dome of the Rock, where the Dome of the Rock exists. And Agrippa has no problems to see what happens in the area. He can see the animal sacrifice, be satisfied. I don't know why, but that's the fact. And more than that, in the moment we put the temple in the south and we try to understand where is the place of the Hashmonaim palace, it comes out that the area is nearby Wilson Arch. And this is exactly what Josephus Flavius is talking about. The Hashmonaim palace was nearby the bridge. And as I say, there is no problem to supply water to the high priest and to wash the priest court from blood. So most of the problems I've asked are solved in the moment we came to the conclusion that the temple was lower in this area. Another problem which can be solved and is the fact, you know, one of the main problems Dan Bahat has spoken about was the place of the Hakra, which was a fortress in the south. Here, when we arrange the area, as I've spoken with you now, that this is the place of the Antonia. This is the place of the temple. And here, in the south, was the Hakra. Which means, against what Dan Bahat said now in the morning, the temple was not in the highest place. It was between two small mountains. In a higher place, according to David's city, but in between two small hills. This hill was destroyed by the Hashmonaim, and now we can see as it was before the Hashmonaim. It means the temple was in between. And indeed, it's very interesting that in our sources, in the Jewish sources, in the Talmud, it's written, and now I will translate it from Hebrew, that at first they thought to build the temple on the highest point, and they had decided to lower it in order that the temple will be between two shoulders. In Hebrew it's called Ben Ktefav Shachin. Between the two shoulders is the temple. And this is exactly what you see. Here one hill, this is the Hakra, and this is the Dome of the Rock. The rock of the Dome of the Rock. You see? In the Hashmonaim time, this hill was destroyed, and how it looks nowadays. It means the temple is lower in between. And it was against, and you must understand, maybe this is part of the quarrel between Judaism and the belief of other nations. All of them believe that the God must be in the top of the hill. And we believe that it's not important. Charles Sloan made a wonderful work about the survey of this area. And he and Wilson describes the cistern in the area. Here's the area itself, and the blue points are the cisterns. There are more than 35 cisterns in the area. When you look at the map, you can see that there is a difference between the cistern in the north than the cistern in the south. In the north, most of the cisterns are small and rectangular shape, round, rectangular, and they are small. In the south, they are very large, and the form is not rectangular. it's an, they have no shape, you know, it's amorphic shape, you see? And the dimension, it's something very huge. For example, this this area is about 1 dunam, 100 square meter, 1,000 square meter. It's a fifth acre. Yes. It's very huge. I have a feeling that maybe this cistern is the remains of the Jewish temple. It was destroyed, covered, and it was made from very big stones. And in between, there became very cisterns. They were plastered and used for water. So in order to find the temple, we have just to go inside, and maybe we will find the evidence of the Jewish temple. You see, it's very, it's not the same thing in the north and in the south. Look, I try not to talk about numbers because it's I have problems. I'm thinking about meters and you are thinking about feet. But I would like to show you something very interesting. Look, here is the level of the water aqueduct. And we know that it was above the level of the water gate. And we can calculate it according to the literature sources, exactly go down till we get to the level of the Temple Mount. It's here. Now we go back to the rock, in the Dome of the Rock, and according to Josephus Flavius, we will go down 25 meters, and we will come to the same level. And in the area itself, the Barclay Gate, which is here, look at the left, it's in this area, is the only one original gate in the wall we have found. Its level, its entrance level, is in the same level. Even the cisterns, you see, the base of the cistern, the bottom of them is here, in the same level. So it's very interesting that all the evidence from the rock, from the water aqueduct, from Barclay Gate, all brings us to the same level. So maybe it's right. This is the level of the Temple Mount. As I told you, most of the questions I've asked were solved. But only one question hasn't been yet solved. The question is, how come that this area is so large, so big than what we see, what's mentioned in the sources? And this, as I told you, it's something very huge. And in order to understand who built the court we see nowadays, I try to make a table of all the temple's court which were built during the Roman Empire. And here you can see, this is a graph, you see, this means the dimensions of the court. You can see here Augustus Temple, Heracles Temple, Augustus Forum in Rome, in Jerusalem, everywhere. And I go to Britain, to Lube, to Yugoslavia, Switzerland, all over the empire. And you can see that this is the temples in the 1st century BC. And these are the temple courts in the 1st and the 2nd century. And this is in the 3rd and the 4th century. It's very interesting to see that in this period, in the 2nd century, the temple courts are very huge. And you can find that this court we have nowadays in Jerusalem is the largest one all over the Roman Empire. And something which is similar to this is only the Jupiter Temple in Damascus, which was built in the 2nd century. In the 1st century, there was not such a huge building at all, such a huge court. So we have a feeling that maybe this court fits to the 2nd century and not to the time of Herod. And let us go to our friend Herod the Great. And let us check all the buildings he had done. And we will see that most of his buildings are very small. The Double Gate, Alunei Mamre, the palace in Masada, Kypros, the palace in Caesarea, Masada, and Jericho, Herodion, all of them are very small. And here you can see the Moriah court. It's another dimension. It's not the same scale. In order to give you an impression of the what we are talking about, you know, you can see here that the old Acropolis in Greek, in Etna, we can put it inside the area. And more than that, all the project of Herod, we can put inside this area. It's another scale. It's something in another point of view. It's like, let us say, a small hotel in Jerusalem in the last century and the Hilton Hotel nowadays. It's another scale. Now the question is, who built this, if not Herod? You know, we call these stones of the temple of the Moriah court, we call them Herod style. You know, they have a border all around, cut border all around. But the fact is that this style of border, we find it about 700 before Herod and about 1,000 years later. So it's very strange to call it Herod style. But here you see the stones here in Jerusalem in the Moriah court. And when we go back to project of Herod, you will see that the stones which are used by Herod are very small. In Masada, in Jericho, something else at all. When he plasters the building, he is using a border all around. But he is not using such huge stones. It's something else. So again is the question, who is the person who had the ability to use such huge stones? And I am going back to the Roman Empire trying to find who is the person. As I know you don't speak Hebrew and you don't read Hebrew, so I can show you this. And tell me, please, do you know where it is from? It looks like somebody assumed where it's from. It looks like the Wailing Wall. Maybe like Hebron, the double gate. But my dear friends, this is from Baalbek. And this is the world court of Jupiter Temple, which was built in the 2nd century. In order to have the feeling how huge it is, I have a picture with a person walking nearby. You can see this person here? You see? It's something huge. The height of these stones is approximately... It's bigger than the stones we have in here in Jerusalem, but it's the same style, with the curve all around, with the border all around. When I came to Baalbek, I was not there, but I tried to find the books and literature about it. Here you have the plan of a Jupiter temple in Baalbek. You see, here is the temple itself, here is the court, and here is a polygon, which is an entrance area. When I saw this, I said, well, wait a moment, I know this. And now, let's go to our area and see. You see, here is the Dome of the Rock, here is the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and in between them, there is a line, a symmetric line. You see, all the area, you know, it's very strange. All the area is not rectangular exactly. There is no one line which is parallel to another. You see, this is not parallel to this. This is not parallel to this. It's an echo. It's a lot of elements with no relationship between them. But between these two elements, there is a line which combines them together. So I have taken the temple of Baalbek, Jupiter temple in Baalbek. I brought it to the same scale. It's not only a map on a map. It's the same scale. And now you will see what happens. You see? It means that what we see in Baalbek, the entrance fits the Dome of the Rock we see here, and the Jupiter Temple fits the Al-Aqsa Mosque. It means that what the Arabs built on their elements were the remains of a Roman building, a Roman temple. The court is like Baalbek, and the elements inside is also the same thing as Baalbek. Do we have any evidence that in the second century a temple to Jupiter was built in Jerusalem? Yes. It's very simple. Hadrian, who had a very, very strong fight with Bar Kokhba, destroyed Jerusalem, built here a temple to Jupiter, and avoid the Jews to enter to Jerusalem. Change the name of the city to Ilia Capitolina. And so what we see nowadays is the project which was built by this fellow, Adrian. And it means that the Wailing Wall, what we see, the Wailing Wall, where the Jews are praying here, has nothing to do with the Jewish temple. It's Jupiter's wall. And all this project all around is something which was made by the woman. Now you have to ask me, but why? What's the reason that Adrian had built such a huge building in this area, in the edge of the empire? Now we have to understand something about this fellow. Adrian was an emperor who decided to bring peace to Rome. He gave back area which was had been conquered by Trajanus. And he decided that he will stop wars. And he decided that the edge of the empire will be on the east, Israel, Syria, Lebanon, and on the west, Britain. And we know on this side the Hadrian Wall, the famous Hadrian Wall in Britain, in England. And in our area, he built the temples in order to show this is the end of the empire. Because he was a very religious person. And he understood it's not enough to say this is the border of my empire. The culture, the religious of the Romans must be the border. And therefore he has a lot of soldiers without any aim nowadays, because there were no more wars. So the only way was to make and build a lot of buildings all over the Roman Empire. Half of Athens in Greek was made by Adrian. Rome itself, part of it was built by Hadrian. And here in Israel and in Baalbek and Damascus, he built this huge temple court for Jupiter and changed the name of the city to Ilia, which is his private name, and Capitolina is the names of the god he believes in. And maybe by this we can solve one of the most important problems we have in Jerusalem. After the 60-day wars, the archaeologists came to Jerusalem and tried to find where is Ilia Capitolina. and they didn't find till now. The cardo, I hope you have seen it, is from a later time, from the Byzantine period. So where is Ilia Capitolina? There is no evidence, only some coins. But the answer is very simple. This is Ilia Capitolina. This is the terminus of the holy place of Ilia Capitolina. And all the problem is solved immediately. And the Jewish temple is just inside, covered. Because maybe that Josephus, maybe that Hadrian decided to destroy the Jewish temple. He knows that all the troubles the Roman had from the Jews was from this temple. And therefore he covered all the area, all the Jewish temple, which is inside here, and built this wonderful court, which is in the style of the second century, and its walls is like Baalbek, and this is Ilia Capitolina. Till now, everything I spoke with you is logical. You can check me. Everything is very simple. The whole difference, in the moment you look at it in a three-dimensional system, everything jumps out. It's very simple. There is one thing I don't understand, but you have to pay attention to it. And look, please, with me together. As I told you, the Jews are praying here in the Wailing Wall. The Western Wall is about 500 meters, 1500 feet. The Jews are praying only in this small area, which is about 50 meters at all. And you know, in order to come here before the Six Day War was very difficult, because here there was an Arabic quarter, an Arabic settlement. The Mughrabi lived here. And from the Jewish quarter it was very difficult to enter inside. It was much easier to come here, to this area. And the Jews didn't come to this area. They made all the effort to come here. And look how strange it is that the location of the temple, according to our system, is opposite the Wailing Wall. Unbelievable. How comes? Did anyone know about it? And therefore located the Wailing Wall here against the Holy of the Holy? I don't know. But it's a fact. It's in the same location, the place of the Wailing Wall and the place of the temple according to our system. Now I would like to show you with the computer a brief show of the history of this area. Here you can see the temple before Herod, or before the time of the Hashmonaim. Here is the Chakra, here is the rock of the Dome of the Rock, and in between was the small temple. This rock was destroyed by Shimon HaChashmonai. And here you can see the Herod temple with the women court, the temple itself, and the priest court. Here you can see De Antonia, which is the north west point, here, like this. And here is the rock of the Dome of the Rock. And here is the Temple Mount, which is much lower. And now you have here, you can see the Hadrian court, and in between is the Jewish small court. It looks very small, but it's very huge. I made a calculation, all the people in Jerusalem can enter in. There is no problems. Even the Arabs now, they don't use all this area. It is something huge. Most of it is a park. What you see here in the left, you can see the Roman period, here is Jupiter temple, and the polygon, which was built by Hadrian and the court. And you can see the Jewish temple in between, covered by the Romans. The Jewish temple in between the two buildings. In the left, you can see the area nowadays. Here is the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock, which were built on the remains of the Roman temple. And this is what they found. Even they called the city, the Arabs called the city Ilia, because they thought it's the name of Allah. They didn't know that it's the name of Hadrian. And in between the two buildings, the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock, is hidden inside our temple, the Jewish temple. We have just to cover, we have to open it, and we will find our temple, the remains of it, which was preserved by Hadrian. He tried to avoid us to see the temple, but by covering it, we can find the remains of it inside. What I've done till now is only a beginning of a work, because it's now we have to continue on. And in order to understand more about the area, we have to find some more sophisticated ways to enter inside and to get knowledge and information about the area. And we are in the beginning of a very intensive work, which include making radar tests in the area, to make infrared tests, and all this is a new project, which I don't know what's the time now, if we have enough time to talk about 15 this.
Minutes.
I beg your pardon?
15 minutes,
all right. This will be enough. So I've done only the beginning, only to show that we can get a lot of information without digging the area, which can help us to assure ourselves that this is right, that the temple is hidden there. Here, for example, excuse me, I will take another one. This is more interesting. Here you see infrared picture of the railing wall, and here is infrared picture of the continuance of the railing wall, new Robinson Arch. And it's very interesting to see that the wall has the same quality all over, but the infrared picture shows us that here there is something different. It's very hot here. Here it's very cold. I don't know what's the meaning of it, but I have a very good feeling that here is a stone, here is the rock, and here is something which is empty. And here is the place of our temple. You see the difference between the left and the right? And here you can see the wall. It's all the same, all around. Here's another work, which was done by Radar. I don't understand in this subject at all, but it's very simple to understand that when we are going from on the wall with the radar equipment, he sends waves inside, and when it's something empty, it's white, but when it's something which is full with stones or whatsoever, it's black. And you can see that in the lower place, it's empty. And here, it's very black, it's stone. And here is something in between, not black and not white. And what is very interesting is this level is the level of the Hullah Gate nowadays. And it means, to my opinion, that here are the caves underground the Hullah Gate, as it's written in our sources. Har HaBayit was keeping. It was cave by caves. So it's empty underground the Hullah Gate, and above it We have the Hulda Gate, and what we see are the remains after the temple was destroyed. You see, the radar proves the same idea. This is it's very interesting. But as I told you, it's only a beginning of a work. What I'm doing is I by myself. I have no institute underground me, behind me. I'm doing it alone. And I have a feeling that we have something here, which is very important. And I ask each of you and every one of you to take part, to continue on trying to find the hidden secrets of the Temple Mount. Thank you.
Please, let's take some time for your questions.
No problems. I'll try to do my best. But try to speak a very simple English so I will understand. Yes.
From what I understand, it was supposed to be possible to look through the Eastern Gate directly into the Holy Place. Is there any evidence from your model of from archaeology of the remains of where the Eastern Gate should be? That would imply that the Eastern Gate is now known is farther north than it should have been.
Yes. I want to tell you that there is no archaeological evidence, but there is a literature evidence from the 13th century by Historia Parchi, and he said that in the eastern wall, let us take another, wait a moment please. Wonderful. You can see here is the Golden Gate. And this Historia Parchi said that in the south of this gate, you will find another gate, which is the entrance to the Temple Mount. Now we can't see it because it's covered by graves. But it's very interesting that there is a literature evidence that in south of the Golden Gate, there is another gate, the Eastern Gate, Shushan Gate, according to our sources.
How far down would that have to be buried in order to fit your model?
It's from the ground level? It's about 15 meters.
15 meters below the
graves? No, below the graves, yes. Or below the area, as it is now, you see? You have to go down from the area 15 meters and you will find the temple. Yes, please.
Why did you pray only on that one section of the wall?
I don't know. That's a fact. That I told you, I don't know why, but it's very interesting that the location they are praying is exactly against the Jewish holy of the holy. I don't know why. I don't know. It's a fact. And the place is, people, the Jews are praying here only the last 400 years. Yes?
Do the Muslims do any archaeology at all? Do they dig it up?
There is no way to dig. No way. They don't do anything. I don't know what they are doing, the Arabs. But we have no way to dig inside. The only one thing we ask is to enter to the cisterns. And we are working on it. Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Have you ever overlaid the map of the cisterns onto your model to see perhaps?
This is what we are doing now. It's in the middle of the work, trying to fit all together and see what's going on.
But again, I just want to thank you, two of you, on behalf of our audience, for just an outstanding, well-done lecture.
Thank you.
Diagram, and there's a limited supply, hint. And there's a video, let me tell you candidly, you don't want to leave without. And it's too bad the house people will have to get whatever we leave. So the video is $20, the publication is $5, and it goes, of course, to support what Kuvia is doing. And so I encourage you, those of you that have any interest at all, to take advantage of the supply that he brought with him. If there's more demand than he has available, obviously we'll take names and work it by mail, but I wanted to call it to your attention.
We need to, before we dismiss, to have Ruthie come and give us the little schedule for the day. Mm-hmm.
But again, I just want to thank you, two of you, on behalf of our audience, for just an outstanding, well-done lecture.